This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham and Zach Peerless. We're going to talk some UVA Virginia Tech basketball, wrapping up last night's game in Blacksburg. Zach was on the scene for us in Castle Coliseum. And I've got to ask first, Zach, I wasn't there. I've covered UVA Virginia Tech games in that arena a few times over the years. It's usually a crazy environment. The Tech fans get really up for this game for lots of good reasons. What was it like last night in the Castle?
Yeah, it was definitely a really good, really good college atmosphere. You know, one of the things that I like about Castle Coliseum, and this was actually my first trip there, is that in a lot of stadiums you see the seats behind the baskets don't go that deep, but in Castle, the student section, which is behind the basket, actually goes up, you know, several rows, and so it's really, the press row is opposite of that on the opposite end. And you really get to see, you know, these thousands of students jumping. And usually, you know, you either have students on the sides or you don't have that many students behind the basket. But they did a really good job. For as much as I grew up not really liking Virginia Tech, Enter Sandman is a great tradition, whether it's for football or basketball. And it was a great atmosphere. It got really, really loud at times. And you know, Virginia, give them credit. They went in, and just like last week when they went in and defeated North Carolina, they went into a hostile environment and won a big-time ACC game.
Yeah, I don't think for folks who watch on TV who've never been in Castle Coliseum, I mean, and we're talking to a lot of UVA fans listening to this podcast, that TV does it justice. You know, that not only does it go straight up behind there, the student section behind that basket, and that's the visiting team basket in the second half, because it's right behind the visiting team bench. Of course, visiting teams have the choice. They can decide which basket they shoot at in which half. But you tend to, you know, your coach wants to have the team in front of you for that second half. And so as a result, you're shooting into that. But it not only does it go straight up, but it feels like it's hanging over the court. I mean, I don't know how they do it. And those kids are loud. They're obnoxious. They're profane. And I mean that in a positive way. I don't mean to demean that at all. A lot of fans are profane at games these days, but they're loud, and you can hear them, and you feel them. And even Virginia Tech teams in past years, before Buzz Williams revived this program, even past teams that weren't very talented gave Virginia teams fits in that place. And I say that. I've also been to games there where, you know, they're playing a non-Virginia, non-Duke, non-UNC when the place is just a mausoleum. But, yeah, what an interesting environment last night. Plus, the Red Panda was there. So, you know, it was a big deal, right? So,
absolutely. She's an all-time great halftime performance. If you haven't seen Red Panda, you've got to go see her. What she does is, I've seen it probably at least a dozen times now, just covering a lot of basketball games, covering a lot of college basketball. I still don't understand how she does it. I don't think I'll ever understand how she does it.
Yeah, I'm jealous of you because we haven't seen Ren Panda and JPJ this year. I thought they might bring her out for the Duke game. Did not. Also, Quick Change, one of my favorite halftime acts. So, definitely jealous of you in that respect. Also, for the TV viewers, we know you didn't get to see this, but you took a picture of Jay Billis talking to her before the game. That was the 94 feet with Jay Billis, and it went a little long, to be honest. They didn't walk with her, but he talked to her for quite a while. So, yeah, fun environment. Big game environment last night for Virginia. Let's talk about Kyle Guy. Scott and I talked in our podcast last night about a lot of things, a little bit about Kyle Guy, mostly about some other things. But Kyle had the big game, 23 points. He had 17 in the first half when Virginia wasn't scoring. Nobody else seemed like they could throw the ball in the ocean. And he kept the offense going, kept the team in the game with his hot shooting in the first half. Hit a couple of dagger threes in the second half. He had that dunk. Who is this Kyle Guy guy? I had to look at the guy and see the number on his jersey to realize that was Kyle Guy with that follow-up dunk. Big game for him in a big game environment. Kyle Guy coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. The other writers that I was sitting with, we were joking around and saying that if you put a bet on Kyle Guy having a put that dunk last night, you can probably retire at this point. You'd make plenty of money. He was absolutely terrific. And one of the things that you appreciate when you watch in person is, you know, how quickly does he get there? You can appreciate it sometimes on TV, but there was one three he caught in the corner and he got it off so quickly. I don't even think he really had the ball in his hands cleanly when he caught it, and it just, you know, found the bottom of the net. And he is, you mentioned guys that can't, you know, seemingly throw it in the ocean. Kyle Guy's a guy who makes one and the basket seems like an ocean for him. And that's the exact words that Braxton Key said after the game. He was terrific. He was, it's really hard to stop a guy who shoots the ball that quickly. There were several times where Virginia Tech was right there and he just knocked him down. And he only had, I believe, two more threes in the second half. But again, he was, his release is so quick and his off-ball movement is so precise. He reminds me a lot of Klay Thompson, who Tony Bennett coached at Washington State. Obviously, Klay Thompson is a lot bigger and can do some more things headed towards the basket. But when you see Klay Thompson get really hot from deep, it's because he's running off those screens and his fellow guards are finding him. And that's exactly what Kyle Guy does. When he gets hot, he's the best shooter in the nation, especially in the system he plays in.
And the system he plays in is so perfect for his skill set. Those pin-down screens, he's expert at this stage, 3 years of running off them. The continuity motion offense that they run. I would love, you know, you see this in European soccer where they put monitors on the guys, like embed them in their uniforms to measure things like how many miles they run during a soccer match. I'd love to see them do that with Kyle in a game because he's constantly in motion. He plays 35 plus minutes a night most nights, and I'd love to see one how many miles he runs, and then I feel sorry then for the guy who has to keep up with him because not only do you have to keep up with Kyle Guy running around the court like he does, baseline to baseline, you know, extended all the way out to the front court. But then when you're chasing him in that mover blocker offense, no matter what you're running through screens, you're getting beat up by Mamadi Diakite and Jack Salt, to a lesser extent Jay Huff. And so yeah, it's tough keeping up with him, and to a lesser extent Jerome, because of the nature of that offense. And the way Kyle runs off those screens.
Yeah, absolutely. And it reminds me a little bit, obviously I said Klay Thompson, but for UVA fans, Joe Harris was a guy who, he was the original three-point marksman for these Tony Bennett teams. You know, he could really light it up. And the thing that was so good about him was he always got his feet set early. He was square to the basket. And I, you know, when I watched him, I'm always so impressed with that. Obviously, he just won the NBA three-point contest, so he's learning to light it up at every level, and he always has been able to. But I'd say Kyle Guy, from what I've seen, is just as quick, if not quicker, in terms of getting square to the basket and getting his shot off. He is just so lightning quick with that release. He doesn't need that much space. I know he's small. I know he's not really much of a threat to go to the basket as maybe Joe was or Klay Thompson is, but he is so quick getting that shot off. It's like there's no way to defend a three that gets off that quickly, and even if he has a hand in his face, he doesn't need much time or much space.
He's been better getting in the lane the last, especially this year. Last year he got a little better. First year it seemed like all he did was shoot threes. Now last night, that said, he shot the ball 15 times from the floor, 8 of 15, 6 of 13 from 3. I'll add this observation from someone else to what you said there, Zach, about seeing him in person and how different it is seeing him in person and being able to appreciate him from that perspective vis-a-vis TV. My wife Crystal covers the ACC tournament the last 2 years with us, and last year, of course, Virginia made a run, won the ACC tournament. So we saw Virginia up close and personal three times from courtside. You know, we're down there on the floor, which, you know, at JPJ, at Castle Coliseum, you're sitting up in the stands, so it's even harder to see. But from the floor, boy, you really get an appreciation of him. And so I take for granted that I watch a lot of these games and I watch these guys in person. And I asked Crystal after the first Virginia game last year at the ACC tournament, you know, what's your impression of the Virginia team? You've seen them up close now, how big they are, how fast they are, whatever. And she said, does Kyle Guy even look at the rim when he shoots it? And that's how quick it is. You know, seeing it through her eyes, it was so interesting. Does he even look at the rim when he shoots it? He's so adept at being lined up to the basket, his shoulders are square, no matter how his feet might be contorted, his it might seem like he's out of position, but he catches and shoots so quickly, and he's so perfectly aligned. I would love to be a part of like one of his off-season training sessions to see how he does that to get ready, because it does seem like he's running through a screen, jumping, catching the ball, and shooting all in one motion. And it's accounting for the fact he is 6'2", 175. He's not 6'6", 6'7", shooting three-pointers like Adel Curry was. He's more like a Steph Curry. He's got to account for his lack of size with more quickness, and that's what makes him dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think adding on to this and maybe wrapping it up, I think that one thing that you have to praise Virginia for is they did a great job of continuing to get him the ball. I mean, he shot 10 times in the first half. I haven't gone back and looked, but I'm sure that there have been games where he doesn't get 10 shots in a game, and I'm sure there have been probably most of his halves, if not all of his halves, he doesn't get 10 shots in a single half. So Virginia realized, you know, our offense isn't clicking, but we've got Kyle who is playing out of his mind right now, and until we can work through it and until we can get DeAndre Hunter back on the floor in the second half, you know, he missed 12 minutes of that first half with two fouls. Until we can get him back on the floor and kind of get back to our normal offense, we're going to keep giving Kyle guy chances, and he's going to keep making us look good and adding up our assists for us.
So now we'll talk about a column that we're recording this podcast Tuesday afternoon. Literally just about 15 minutes before we started recording, Zach sent his story for today, and it's one that I'm jealous. I should have written it first, and Zach beat me to it, and of course he did a great job. The Virginia death lineup. I've been calling it that on podcasts for basically since November. But this Virginia death lineup it's not the starting lineup. Maybe it will be the starting lineup eventually, but it's the four guard lineup with Mamadi Diakite. It's Jerome and Guy and DeAndre Hunter with Braxton Key off the bench, and then Diakite at the center. It's getting a lot of time lately. I noted in a column today, Zach, that when looking at KenPom.com, over the last five games, that five-person lineup there, that quintet, has been on the floor for 16.8% of Virginia's minutes over the last five games, and that includes a game that Ty Jerome didn't even play in. So when you factor that in, it's actually been a closer to 40% of the minutes have been that lineup. But this is that is the lineup. That when you see Key out there, you see the versatility of Key and Hunter, especially keying that. Take us into this. Why is this the best lineup for Virginia down the stretch?
Sure. Well, you mentioned it. The death lineup is essentially supposed to be what basketball has shifted towards, and it's positionless basketball. You have big men with guard skills. You have guard skills you have guards who are big enough and strong enough to, you know, play against bigger players. And it's really just, can you get your most versatile five guys out there? And that is Virginia's most versatile five guys on both ends of the court. So, again, Ty Jerome, he's your lead ball handler. He is your perfect college guard. He's not afraid to take and make big shots. He's a terrific passer. He's just a perfect floor general for UVA right now. He's playing really well, and he's making big shots. Kyle Guy is that guy who spaces the floor unlike anyone else. You know, he's running off screens. He is just wearing opponents down. And when he's making big shots, that's a huge new dimension to the offense. DeAndre Hunter, and I kind of sheepishly made this comparison, is like Kevin Durant. You know, when you look at Kevin Durant, he's a guy who stands, I don't know what he's officially listed as, but he's the height of a big man in the NBA at this point, and he has the skills of a guard. You know, he can play point guard if you need him to. That's what DeAndre Hunter brings. And then you look at Braxton Key and Mamadi Diakite, two outstanding defenders, two great rebounders, two good athletes. Obviously, Diakite is going to be a little bit more interior-based, and Key is a little bit more perimeter-based. But they can defend both the perimeter and the interior, which is so, so important. And I was actually just looking up Braxton Key. He actually leads the nation in defensive rating at 81.8, which is an outstanding number. If you want to know how good he is, he's better than Zion Williamson, who is number two. So Braxton Key, I think that we knew what we were getting. Virginia knew what it was getting when they brought him in as a transfer. He's a really good defender, a really good athlete, and he has struggled at times to find his shot. But the defense, I think, has been the one thing that has maybe even exceeded expectations. Virginia expected a good, versatile defender. they've gotten an elite versatile defender.
Yeah, you know, being a Virginia basketball observer like I am, I tend, when I'm especially at games, I'll pick out one guy on defense and try to watch, and Key is one to really pay attention to when he's in the game playing defense, because yes, he will actually get, because of the Virginia runs the four guard lineup so much, he'll be the four defensively for Virginia, and he'll be guarding a big a lot of times in the post. He'll be, if the other team doesn't counter with a four guard lineup itself, he's typically guarding the other team's four, and he's just as good at guarding that guy in the post. He's very adept at that, both ball denial and then actually being able to square up with a guy who has the ball in the post trying to score a basket. But he not only can he switch off then and guard that pick and roll, which is so important, the hard hedge in Virginia's defense. You know, you have to be able to hedge out there on the pick and roll as a big when you're playing big. But he can guard the point. He can guard the point straight up. He can switch off, and there's no drop off with him out there. In fact, he's just as good, as you mentioned, with a defensive rating. He's just as good as anybody out there in the perimeter. So his versatility, I think, is so much. I mean, DeAndre Hunter, of course, had the solid second half against Kobe White last week in the win over North Carolina. Gets a lot of attention for his defensive skills. But, boy, Key, it's like they have two Swiss Army knives out there with those two guys. We kind of forget now. You know, back in the summer, early fall, you know, we were checking our news alerts every hour or so, it seemed like, there for a while to see if Braxton Key would be ruled immediately eligible or would he have to sit out a year transferring from Alabama. And we all breathed that collective sigh of relief, probably caused a thunderstorm in the Mid-Atlantic when the word came down, yes, he'll play this year. Now, he hasn't started consistently, but coming into his own now, he got 27 minutes last night, I think. The more time you see Key on the floor, I think the better you're going to see this team play.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned it. He's essentially what DeAndre Hunter is on offense. Braxton Key is for defense. You know, you think about DeAndre Hunter, he's a guy who can handle the ball. He's a guy who can shoot it from the outside. He shot it well from the outside this year. But he's also the guy who can just put his head down and get to the basket. Braxton Key is the guy who stops other teams from having a player who can do that. And you saw it last night. He spent a lot of time on Nikhil Alexander Walker, who is probably Virginia Tech's best pro prospect. And he did a really good job. It was a long night for all of the Hokies. And I think one of the things that's impressed me, and I talked to Braxton after the game, and obviously a lot was made of his shooting and how he had struggled so much over the past months. But what was interesting is after kind of the media scrum dispersed, I kind of asked him, I said, Braxton, you know, I didn't really know how to say it other than what makes you such a good rebounder. And he said, well, you know, that's always been a big part of my game. I'm always trying to be alert and active as soon as the shot goes up. But then I asked him, has it been difficult, you know, adjusting to be a rebounder in the pack line defense? And that was interesting to me because you said, yes, you know, in our defense, we don't make as many switches. You know, you're responsible for different guys. It's a little bit different, but he's gotten a lot more comfortable with it. And it's one of these things where that's a finer point of the pack line defense. You know, obviously the first thing is, can he play the defense in general? Can he play the first 20 seconds of defense? And he's always had the physical skills to be able to fit there. What I've been impressed with is how well he's adjusted to finishing the defensive sequence. And he said it was a little bit of an adjustment, but what helps him is that he's always been a good fundamental rebounder. And, you know, through experience and through going where other guys are going to be, and through just getting more time and growing with these guys, he's gotten to be a better rebounder. You look at his numbers now, he is fourth in the ACC in defensive rebound percentage. He's also 23rd in offensive rebound percentage. So he's just getting so much more comfortable, I think, not only playing the pack line defense, but finishing those pack line defensive possessions with a strong defensive rebound.
I thought, and his emergence, you know, as he came in the game in the first half, and then, of course, playing so much in the second half, I liked what Virginia Tech was doing offensively in the first 8-10 minutes, maybe. They were running a high post offense, basically. They were keeping Blackshear out on the perimeter. If he didn't have the ball, he was basically stationed on a three-point line for a lot of plays. But he was also sort of like a high post initiator, an old-timey center almost, like you want to say, like a 1940s or 50s center, where the ball would come into his hands around either the free throw line itself or that same distance out of the paint, maybe 12, 15 feet on either of the wings. And they were running basically like ball screen backdoor cuts off him. You know, the guards would run through him, and they'd run a cycle of him sometimes and make it really hard for the Virginia defenders to keep up. It kind of took away for a while what Virginia does so well, which is that help side defense. You know, the guys dropping down and helping out behind the play, because they were running cutters through there the whole time. Key, I thought, was important in cutting that down. You know, Tech was very effective in the paint in the first half, 10 of 12 shooting in the paint in the first half. I didn't get final numbers on how they finished up shooting in the paint, but it just felt like in the second half, a lot of that went away. There were some turnovers, some balls tipped away, and Key was really important in that adjustment that allowed Virginia to slow down Virginia Tech offensively.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is another – I know that we've talked about this before, kind of the evolution of Virginia basketball under Tony Bennett and how Tony Bennett has tried to evolve on both ends to make the most out of his players. And he's starting to simply get better players, better recruits. And we've seen that change offensively, and they have at times altered their offense. But one of the things that I think is important is that now Virginia has – you know, at first it was, is Virginia going to out-execute you? And are their players going to be put in positions where they're going to succeed, maybe against better players? Now Virginia has the players and the athletes to simply dominate other teams' best players as well, because their execution is so good. And like I said, Braxton Key, here's a guy who you mentioned, you know, a few months ago, wasn't even sure he was going to play at all this year. Now he leads the nation in defensive rating, which is simply incredible. And it's, you know, a testament to his hard work and also Tony Bennett's ability to say, we have this guy who's a terrific defender. Let's put him in advantageous positions. Let's play him with our best players, and let's, you know, use him to our advantage. It's hard to think where Virginia would be right now if Braxton Key hadn't gotten that eligibility. And you're seeing how good he can be and how good he makes this team and this death lineup when he's playing at his best.
So I'm curious, Zach. I wrote a column today about Kihei Clark. He played 20 minutes in the first half. A lot of that, I think, was because DeAndre Hunter got his second foul with 12:22 to go, had to sit the rest of the half out. He started the game, but I think Clark would have probably, you know, he wouldn't have seen 20 minutes necessarily in the first half if not for Hunter's lack of availability. But then you only saw him for 2 minutes in the second half, checked in around the 12:19 mark, left at the 10:19 mark, didn't see him again. That turnover at the end of the first half, Tony Bennett very visibly walked on the court, was very angry with him at that silly turnover, trying to advance the ball with 4 seconds left. Steal leads to a layup, momentum for Tech going into the halftime break. Clark is worrying me. I think since the Miami game, where he started, played 37 minutes, had 6 assists but 6 turnovers as well, he's really struggled from the shooting. His confidence seems to be gone shooting. He had, you know, the underwhelming effort defensively against a much taller Kobe White in the Carolina game, got replaced in that game, and DeAndre Hunter was key in that defensive effort, shutting down White late to key the Virginia win. I'm worried about Clark. I think he's a very valuable part of this team, and his ball pressure in certain games is really beneficial to this Virginia team, but he seems to just have no confidence right now. I'm wondering, after the game last night, was there any chatter about Kihei Clark from the team, from Coach Bennett, anybody else?
Sure, yeah, and there definitely was. I asked Ty Jerome, I said, you know, you've been a guard, a lead guard, a point guard who was asked to play big minutes in ACC games as a freshman. And you mentioned, you know, Tony Bennett came up to Clark and was really not happy with him at the end of the first half. Ty Jerome also came up to him, and he said, you know, it's okay. And he said after the game, you know, I've been in that position before. I've made dumb turnovers, and it's part of the learning process. I definitely understand the worry with Kihei Clark. You know, the shot has abandoned him. You mentioned Kobe White. Kobe White's just not a good matchup for him, so I wouldn't necessarily be too worried there. I think the thing that you mentioned, since the Miami game, it's worth looking at the teams that they have played. So they've played Duke, Kihei Clark's just not a good matchup there. It's the second matchup against Duke. He wasn't a good matchup in the first, and it's just not really, he's not going to compete with the guys that are standing, much taller than him. And, Zion Williamson standing next to Kihei Clark is not something Virginia ever wants to see. Then they played North Carolina. You mentioned another big lead guard in Kobe White. And then they've played Notre Dame, and they've played Virginia Tech. Those are the two teams. So three of those four teams, they're playing for the second time around. So they've seen Kihei Clark before. They know where his weaknesses are. I think that's worth noting because there are some very noticeable weaknesses in Clark's game. When you press him away from the basket or pressure him, even in half-court settings, he can struggle a little bit. And I'm still not sure if his left wrist, I believe, is 100%. He still has that wrapped up. There's no splint or cast or anything. But there's, reason to believe that that's not quite 100%. I think that teams have simply seen him once, and they've scouted him well. And then, guys go cold. Braxton Key went cold for the past month. Kyle Guy went cold for a stretch of three or four games. Guys struggle at times, and right now, I think the issue is teams are keying in on his weaknesses, and then Clark hasn't been able to make them pay by hitting a corner three or two, which he actually had done pretty well up until this recent stretch. So I think what you hope for here is he's got 5 days of an important Louisville game where he could play a big role against some of Louisville's smaller guards. You're saying to him the same thing that you said to Braxton Key when he was struggling. You're going to get your shot back. You can hit that corner three. You're going to need to hit that corner three. Maybe if it's just once a game or once or twice a game, if you can hit one of those or one out of every two of those, that's huge for us. And, they will work through this. They will make adjustments. And I think Clark, the struggles are also magnified because he plays next to two such good guards in Jerome and Guy. So when you see Clark in there and the offense isn't running as smoothly, you realize just how good Jerome and Guy are. I think that he'll be okay. It is a little bit worrying right now, but again, I think that he'll get his shot back. Shots don't just disappear forever. Braxton Key, hit two shots after making one in the previous month. So right now, I get the worry. I get that he's pressing a little bit. I get that teams have a little bit of a better read on him. But I think Virginia will do a good job of trying to put him, just like they tried to put Braxton Key, in more advantageous positions. And I think that he'll get back to playing better basketball. I don't know if he'll ever play as well as he did, maybe in that Virginia Tech game or some of the earlier games. But some of the skills that he brings are still really important to this team. And I think he'll get more comfortable going forward, and I think Virginia and Kihei Clark will be okay.
Yeah, he's just got to get his confidence back. Even if you missed a shot, at least take the shot with confidence. The air ball he had last night, after the air ball, there was another play maybe two or three possessions later where he was wide open in the corner again. He didn't want to shoot it. Tech sagged off him, and he eventually shot it. Oh, you just got to have confidence. Even if you miss it, man, you got to have the confidence. So you said something, Zach, that made me think of something. You talked about at the end of the first half, I mentioned Tony coming out to talk to Clark and then Ty going over to Clark and saying it's going to be okay. It made me think after the game last night, I'm reading in your column and I think also Jerry Ratcliffe's column after the game about how Ty said that to the effect that you wouldn't know from what Coach Bennett was telling us in the locker room at halftime that we were winning by 3 points, that he lit into them that much at halftime. And it makes me think now, that's a couple times now in the last couple of weeks, the last two Mondays, that infamous media timeout, 11:32 to go, down six, where he lit into his team and about the turnovers and that, and then Virginia comes back and storms back and wins that game, and then last night he lights into him at halftime when they're up by 3 points on the road at number 20 Virginia Tech. I'm wondering now, Tony's such a mild-mannered guy. He's so low-key. Are we feeling the pressure now? Virginia hasn't been playing its best basketball the last couple of weeks. Is that starting to show maybe through Tony Bennett and with his team?
Yeah, and you mentioned it, and also it's funny that you bring that up because Ty Jerome mentioned it. He said, I had never seen Tony Bennett yell in my first 2 years here, and now he's lit into us twice in about a week. And I think what's important there is that he realizes, this goes back to just having the quality of players he has, he realizes that even when Virginia isn't executing at its best, it should win basketball games. It has future NBA players on it. It has outstanding college basketball players on it. You know, this is a team that has more skill than arguably any Tony Bennett team he has had in Charlottesville. So when there, you know, there were times when he would see a team that's not executing well and be upset and realize, though, that maybe it's just not enough to overcome a more skilled team. This team, he realized, has the skill to be able to execute at a high level and perform at a high level each night. And even when it's not performing at its best, it should be able to do enough so that they can have a lead or still, you know, be able to play with the opponents. And so when he kind of lit into the team at halftime, I'm assuming it was one of these things where he was simply saying, we can play much better than this. We have the individuals to play much better than this. And that hasn't always been the case there. But this year, I think it's, you know, I don't know if it's pressure, but I think it's, he realizes this team is really good. This team can absolutely go far into March and play for a long time if they want to. But sometimes they have to make sure that they're still executing really well, because the nature of the system they play, there just isn't that much room for error.
Good observation. Yeah, I think that's right. I think this, if you like he has, identified this team as that team with that potential, yeah, you'd expect more out of them. And they're a veteran team. You know, he had a veteran team in 2016, that team that went to the Elite Eight, should have gone to at least the Final Four, lost in the Elite Eight round to Syracuse. That was a team with senior leadership. You had Brogdon, Malcolm Brogdon, you had Anthony Gill, you had Mike Toby. This team with a lot of three-year leadership, in terms of Jerome and Guy and Hunter and even Huff, he doesn't play as much, but he's been in the program for 3 years. Salt's been there. As Kyle Guy said last night, they did a little segment with him and Jack Salt on the TV broadcast. I think he called Jack Salt a 117th year senior. Salt's been there for a while as well. So you got veteran guys. You can be harder on veteran guys than you would be necessarily on a young team, even last year's team, which a lot of the same guys, but the key guys were younger guys. Yeah, that makes a good point. But yeah, it's just noticeable. Tony is such a low-key guy, and he's definitely been edgier. And it's interesting to hear that you say that Ty noted that too. The guys know it, and maybe we'll see them respond appropriately.
Right, and I think a couple other things. One, when you look at this team, they're a little bit more emotional, and they're a little bit more into it than you've typically seen Tony Bennett teams or Virginia teams. You know, last year the senior leader was really Devin Hall, but he's not really a huge vocal guy. Now kind of that lead guard is Ty Jerome, and Ty Jerome will get up in your face and yell at you and encourage you, and it's, you know, Tony Bennett maybe has adapted a little bit to the leadership style of his players, and he knows that they can take, you know, some pretty harsh in-your-face criticism, because Ty Jerome is willing to be an in-your-face player as well. Mamadi Diakite, again, like another emotional guy. Even Kyle Guy last night, we saw him pulling up on the rim, gave a little flex to his own bench, and then that late three, he shushed the crowd. You know, this is a team that maybe has a little bit more emotion to them. You typically think of Virginia as such a, you know, stoic, never gets frazzled team. I wouldn't say that this team gets frazzled, but they will get emotional. And Tony Bennett maybe realizes that they can handle a little bit more emotion. And that's not a criticism of previous teams. It's just a different style of coaching. Not a drastic change, but maybe something that he realizes, we've got emotional guys. I can be a little bit more emotional with them.
That's interesting. So we look forward to a few days off. Tough for fans, but the players get to lick their wounds and get ready for Louisville. Road trip at Louisville on Saturday. What can we look for from you coming up the next few days, getting us ready for the Cardinals?
Sure. So you mentioned it, a little bit of time off. One of the things that I'm going to look at is just how the team has played I guess over the past 6-7 games or so, I think one of the first pieces I did for Augusta Free Press was a looking at the stats for the first third of ACC play, when you also factor in the ACC tournament, of course. So I think it was 7 games in that I looked at it. So now we're about, 13 games in now. So I'll go back and look at that and see what's changed. I mean, I think the biggest things that have changed, you know, Ty Jerome has played at a really high level, but Kyle Guy is the one who's really played so well in the past 3 games. And again, maybe some more dissection of Kihei Clark and what he has been struggling with and if we can expect him to bounce back. Other than that, I think a thing that is important, just in general, I don't know if I'll write about it or not, is that Virginia has been so good on the back end of the Saturday-Monday stretches. And it's been interesting because a Saturday-Monday stretch is the same stretch you get in an NCAA tournament. You know, you play a Thursday-Saturday or a Friday-Sunday. So maybe something on that. We'll see if that, you know, how much that helps. It's a blessing and a curse to play so quickly back-to-back. And Virginia's done it going away on the second half of the back-to-back 2 weeks in a row and come out with 2 impressive wins. So I think that's something to note. Maybe I'll do something there, and then we'll be getting ready for a tough test against Louisville. That's a good team.
A good team that's probably hungry now after the loss to Duke and the near disaster with Clemson. So and Louisville can certainly use something to, you know, push its resume up as well. So it should be a tough test, and we'll Zach will get you ready for it. I'll do my part to get you ready for it as well. Well, Zach, as always, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.